Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Daily Tech News Show is made possible by its listeners. Thanks to all of you, especially patrons of our Patreon. Remember, you can get an ad-free version of the show and more at patreon.com/DTNS. Coming up on the weekend edition, we're going to be talking about AI replacing your Fiverr editor, Canon finishing up its RF lineup, and all the new products we're excited about since the start of the year. This is the Photography News for the month of January 2023 in lovely Cleveland, Ohio. I'm Rich Straffolino.
And from north of the wall, I'm Anthony Lemos.
You know, during the weeks and sometimes during the months, depending on how long between we record episodes, there's photography news that, you know, might get lost in the shuffle. So we like to gather here, shine a spotlight on it. So let's get into some of the quick hit news about photo news you might have missed.
In a move that is more surprising than the information presented, Apple CEO Tim Cook posted a tweet that confirmed what many have suspected for years. Apple is using Sony image sensors in iPhone cameras. The tweet contained a picture of Tim Cook looking over iPhone 14 models in a Sony facility and text saying, "We've been partnering with Sony for over a decade to create the world's leading camera sensors for iPhone."
I'm shocked that they use the biggest image sensor company to make their phones.
Exactly.
All right. Well, with all the lovely discourse between how Twitter is using its blue verification check marks, you know, between old and new standards for who gets one and whether or not it should be a feature, it may be surprising that other social media sites are considering something similar. Software developer Alessandro Paluzzi, who has built a reputation for reverse engineering and discovering new features across a lot of different platforms, found that Instagram, ahead of its official launch, there is evidence in the Instagram app that it may start using a paid subscription model, complete with a blue badge in the current version of the app. It's not accessible now, but it's in the code, and it seems like they're working on it.
Great. The Raspberry Pi Foundation announced a Camera Module 3 series for their diminutive single-board computers. There are four variants in the series. All use Sony's 12-megapixel IMX708 sensor. You get a choice of 29mm or 17mm equivalent field of view, with options for visible and infrared light capture. Whichever you choose, you get autofocus rather than a fixed focus, a 3-megapixel HDR mode, and video recording up to 1080 in 50p. The standard module costs $25, with the wider variant cost $10 more.
You got to make those PAL people happy with that 50p there. Nikon issued a technical service advisory, effectively a recall, for its professional Z9 body. The advisory states that the lens release button does not function as it should, which seems like a big deal on an interchangeable lens camera. It's unclear how many units were impacted, but Nikon has a list of suspect serial numbers and will provide service on the issue at no cost.
No big deal. In better news, Fujifilm released its 3.0 firmware for its X-H2S camera, which claims to greatly improve, their words, not ours, its subject detection, autofocus performance in backlit and other challenging situations. The update also adds a new AI detection feature for insects and drones. Fairly similar, I think. Although these were added under the bird and airplane categories respectively, so maybe not as on target as they thought. Not exactly a traditional Kaizen update, but probably welcome for X-H2S owners.
I'm just going to say some shade thrown at insects for, like, I guess we're just like birds. What, like drones and planes, I get that. But
it seems to me like that it's all insect-like. I mean, I've seen a lot of drones fly, so.
All right. Well, getting into our first discussion here, Neurapix, a German-based startup, has made the bold declaration that they can help photographers edit their photos in just 20% of the time it would normally take them. Their personal imaging assistant software integrates with Adobe Lightroom Classic to learn from previous edits and incorporate your personal style into editing new photographs using what they are calling smart presets.
The company claims once a photographer has invested the initial few hours, they don't have to be sitting at the computer the whole time. For the software to learn by looking at previous edits, Neurapix can edit up to 600 photos per minute or 1,000 photos in as little as 5 minutes, depending on complexity.
Yeah, so the big question is, you know, pricing, right? And here Neurapix is undercutting its closest competitor by as much as 50%, charging 3 cents per photo for the first 1,000 per month and only 2 cents each after that. Using this pricing model, the company says a photographer can edit a 500-picture wedding event, which is the no wedding photographer is taking just 500 photos, but that's a totally separate thing, for as little as $10.
I think that 500 is after culling.
Yeah, okay.
If this feels like a little too much control is being taken away from your hands, the edits made by Neurapix are fully adjustable after they've been processed by the software. In fact, the software will learn from the adjustments photographers make after the processing to improve the process for future edits. And for any photographer that has necessarily developed their own style yet, the company will be selling offerings developed by other photographers. Now, Rich, as a film guy primarily, I'm assuming this isn't so much up your alley, but what do you think this does for the market in general for photo editing?
Well, I think the key there is they set out that wedding photographer as the example. And to me, this is the market for this because it's already very common practice if you're a high volume wedding photographer to farm out, you know, to outsource your editing, right? You've taken the photos and you have maybe a preset, a couple different presets that you're going to be using, but you know, you're going to pay someone on Fiverr. You just have a dedicated editor on your staff, depending on how big your operation is. And that is fairly common. The question is, you know, they say you got to put in these couple hours to train it. And then you're paying, you know, pennies per image. In the grand scheme of things, probably isn't the, you know, I'm sure if this works well, that might alleviate the need to do that. I don't know. It needs to prove itself, right? Because if you try this out and there is one image that is off, and yes, you're going to be looking through this before you give out your deliverables, whatever kind of photographer you are.
Right.
That being off, to me, it would be enough of a violation of trust that maybe it's worth spending more and having more lag time, right? Because theoretically, this could also eliminate a lot of back and forth lag, more uploading photos to people, sharing Dropboxes and stuff like that. Like, I'm seeing there's got to be a better way system to this, but it almost has to be perfect. Otherwise, I feel like a lot of photographers would be uncomfortable with it.
I, as an event photographer myself, I use an application called Narrative Select that helps go through digital photos and find the one where either the focus is just completely blown out, like obviously blown out, or the eyes are closed, things like that, to help cull my culling process. Take that into Lightroom. And then if I could then go through, you know, what's the pre-cull, if you will, and get my final images that I think are worthy of editing, send that to Neurapix and then get that back and then just once over each of those pictures. That's a workflow that I can work with, that I can actually maybe deliver my pictures within a couple days of an event instead of a few weeks later. I think that could be really, really helpful. And I don't know that this is going to affect the market for editors as much as we might think, because if you have a dedicated editor, someone still has to go through and do the final approval, like you were saying, on these photos.
Yeah.
No one should be taking Neurapix and sending them out to the client.
It may take out some of the drudge work from that. Yes. Like, you're getting them a much better base, but you're still going to have to go in and fix the stray hairs and, you know, depending on, you know, the level of edits that you're comfortable delivering and stuff like that. So it may take out a lot of the drudgery of applying, you know, white balance and all your presets. I do find it hilarious, though, that, like, every photographer ever sells presets, and even Neurapix is like, listen, we're going to, you know, we're going to have the Peter McKinnon presets here. Don't worry. We're going to have those for you if you want Sparkling Summer or whatever it's called. Don't worry.
Frodo's presets.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Only if you shoot in RAW, though, obviously.
Only. Well, and in fact, this software requires RAW images. It's not going to mess with JPEGs. So one more reason to shoot RAW.
Is going
to
be very happy. Yeah.
There you go. Speaking of photos, Canon might be about done finalizing its RF mount lineup. It released two new camera bodies that complete its stratification of the mirrorless market. The headliner is the R8, which seems to be the successor to the RP. At least it uses the exact same body and weighs a scant 461 grams. Inside, it looks almost identical to the Canon R6 Mark II with the same resolution, mostly the same video specs, including uncropped 4K 60p, with all of Canon's AI autofocus modes. The big exclusion, of course, ready for this, no IBIS, no in-body image stabilization. But it also costs $1,000 less than the R6 Mark II, starting at a paltry $1,500.
Canon also announced the R50, an APS-C body that looks to replace the now venerable Canon M50 of EFS lens mount fame/infamy. Its big feature is the price. It costs $680 and coming this spring. It also features all of Canon's latest AI features. It records oversampled 4K 30p from a 6K scan, so it should be a pretty decent footage. And it has an OLED viewfinder, so they didn't completely skimp on the displays, something that a lot of times budget cameras can struggle with.
Right, and Canon added some cheap zoom lenses, and I say cheap with, of course, the appropriate amount of salt. The cheap zoom lenses with the RF 24-50mm f4.5 variable to 6.3 image stabilized STM motorized, and the RFS, which was a new one for me, although it's not a new one for the system, as we discovered pre-show. The RFS 55-210 starts at an aperture of f5 up to an aperture of f7.1. It is image stabilized with, I think, 7 stops of stabilization, reportedly, and an STM motor. Now, these are definitely on the slow side, but are fully stabilized, and the price is right, estimated at $300 for the 24-50 and $350 for the 55-210 coming in early spring. These are already listed on Canon's site, ready for pre-order. Cheap glass, very functional. This is an interesting market, but what do you think about the market in general? What's Canon doing here?
Canon, because they have the market share, right? They can diversify their lineup in a way that really no other camera maker can, and it really shows with the R8, which seemed like such an odd duck to me. Like at that price, it's priced at the exact same as the R7, which is a lower number, so in Canon's nomenclature, that should be the better camera, but that's an APS-C stabilized 32 megapixel body. The mind boggles, but when I first saw the R8, I was like, oh, this is like a stills focused camera, right? It doesn't have IBIS, which you maybe don't need necessarily in a stills camera. You're focusing on that type of photographer, but no, it actually is like super well featured with a lot of different video modes. You know, it does like pretty nice slow-mo too. It's like 180p at 1080. So lots of interesting video, but not stabilized. I guess you could do lens stuff. Again, we say the R6 is kind of the wedding photographer camera, right? Kind of the do everything. Mm-hmm. Canon doesn't have to do that with its lineup necessarily. You know, Sony, Panasonic, they all have kind of this main hybrid camera that hits that $2,000 price point and kind of is the do everything. And then they have a video centric body and a high res body. That seems like everyone's strategy except Canon, because they have bigger market share and they can kind of stratify more into a little bit more weird niches. Like the R8 is interesting. But I don't know, like it's also just weird that to be so high powered in video and not have a very baseline video feature. Also, it's weird.
At the same time, we don't know what these components cost to instill in the camera, so it might make sense on their bottom line. But either way, as you're pointing out, they start at just under $700, and then it goes all the way up to the R3 right now at, what is it, like $7,000?
Something like that, yeah.
It's But they have
just add a zero to the you could buy 10 R50s.
Look, there's 10 models. They're all separated by about $50. You just every time you get $50, you can go up a model, you know. And and now they're filling it in with the glass. They've got a really good stable of RF glass now. They've got all the main components filled in for both the L series and the non-L series for mirrorless cameras. They've got a fully functioning system going on for really any budget once you get past your iPhone holders.
The one thing I want to put all camera makers on blast, and Canon is the most egregious example of this, kit lenses. When did we give up having telephoto reach on a kit lens? 24 to 50, you're getting, like, that's normal. I'm not saying, like, 50 is fine. Like, I love a 50 millimeter. It's probably my favorite focal length, to be quite honest. Like, 50-1.7 is, like, that's a gold lens. I absolutely love that. So a 56.3, not exactly a great portrait situation. At least like Panasonic, it does something interesting. They do a 20 to 60, like a 20 millimeter lens. That's fun. That's something you don't see every day. You might not add to your kit for quite some time if you're an aspiring photographer. This is 24 is like table stakes wide for a kit. And then 50? Come on, camera makers, do better.
Yeah, it's definitely something they could work on. But as long as they're selling, they're going to keep selling.
Well, yeah, I mean, and it's Canon, so they probably will sell bunch of these. Exactly. And again, $300, I don't feel like it's gouging. It is a limited lens, but you can get into an R50 with a kit lens for under $1,000. Like, that's what they're going for.
At this price point, you're looking at a Christmas sale at Best Buy, and you're able to get a R10 with a kit lens and a second lens.
And it'll be in a box that says, like, vlogger kit. Also,
right. No stabilization, whatever. And you're walking away under $1,000. You got a decent camera with two lenses and a full set of range. So,
and a system you can buy into too. So, which is nice. All right. Well, if you want a rundown every single day of just the tech headlines, be sure to check out our related show, Daily Tech Headlines. You might hear me on it. All the essential tech news in about 5 minutes. Check it out. DailyTechHeadlines.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
There were a ton of new products announced to start the year. Late last year, we didn't even bother doing an episode. We just, because we knew things were going to happen. Here we are. This is our time for our summary. But let's start out with the one thing we are both excited to see at CES. After over a decade of frustrating aspiring run-and-gun video creators using its Micro Four Thirds cameras, Panasonic finally saw the autofocusing light. Rich wrote that pun. For the first time, it's abandoning its contrast-based depth-from-defocus tech on mirrorless cameras. The Panasonic Lumix S5-2 comes with a hybrid phase detect autofocus, joining what has almost universally become a standard in the industry.
Of course, aside from that major addition, Panasonic says it's using an all-new sensor and imaging engine, although it still tops out at 24 megapixels like the first-gen S5. The camera can also do up to 6.5 stops of stabilization with IBIS and optical stabilization combined. Panasonic puts stabilization in a lot of stuff, so you might actually see that. And it can shoot up to 9 frames per second and offers a 96-megapixel pixel shift mode, something we've seen on their more pricey bodies, but coming down to their more mainstream S5 model now.
Right. And then on the video side, it can shoot 5.9K, almost 6K, so close, in 10-bit 422. It does slow-mo up to 180p at 1080 and offers Panasonic's usual excellent assist tools and comes with an active fan for cooling while still being weather-sealed. Panasonic will ship a $200 more expensive S5-2X in May that will offer RAW video and ProRes recording to an SSD and IP streaming functionality, as well as a fully blacked-out colorway.
Yeah, this was definitely, I did not see this coming. Panasonic has been so steadfast in DFD. It's great. It's wonderful. Everyone loves it except for people that shoot video. Also, we ship, all of our cameras are super video focused, which never made any sense. The only bigger news will be when they bring this to either a GH6S or some Rev on that, or if they bring, if they, you know, do a Rev, a refresh on the S1 or something like that. Right. I would assume they would bring it to the whole lineup, right? Because it seems to be universally agreed to be competent, which has not been able to say about video autofocus for Panasonic for a long time.
Yeah. And I think it says something that Panasonic took this long to get into the phase detect autofocus, which is huge. And they have the pixel shift to give you the, you know, the quadrupled pixels, which is something Canon still hasn't done. So
that's true. That's true. Yeah. I know Olympus or OM Systems does it. I know Sony does it, but you have to like do it on your computer. So no one ever does it.
It's a two-part thing on Sony, but Sony kind of started it out, I think, as far as my knowledge goes. They were the first ones that I heard about doing it. And I think Nikon has a camera or two that does it as well.
It's an interesting capability, especially if you're like you're in a landscape or you just like to print really big. Right. Obviously, everything needs to be completely locked down, and you know you're not going to be probably doing portraits with it. But it's always an interesting feature.
No flies sneezing off to the side.
But Anthony, what else kind of to start the year has really caught your eye in terms of announcements? Just a ton of glass, ton of just accessories and stuff like that. What caught your eye?
It really is. I'm going to start with Sigma's 50mm 1.4 Art. Because this is a lens. Sigma, they've got a good history of creating great lenses at a reasonable price. And this is a 50mm 1.4 high-quality glass. And this comes in under $900.
Yeah, and they're making them for specifically for mirrorless mounts. So it's not – I mean, it's still Sigma, so they're still kind of big. But it's not gigantic like Sigma glass of old. It definitely looks like a pretty cool thing. One of the things that caught my eye is Nikon announced a 26mm f2.8 full-frame lens. They're saying it's their thinnest and lightest autofocusing lens ever, and it costs $500. So it's like a reasonably priced kind of pancake lens. What fascinates me about this is a stealth APS-C lens, because when you apply the crop factor, that's 40mm, which is a classic pancake focal length, right? So you can have this tiny little lens on your APS-C camera. Upgrade to, you know, you got a nice 40mm. You upgrade, 26mm is weird. It's like not that wide. It's kind of stuck in no man's land, but it still works on a full frame. Unlike, you know, if you buy into, and it feels like it's made for APS-C. So you get value when you need the value. And then when you upgrade, you can still have usable glass, which I like.
Yeah. 26mm is a little weird. Like the 35mm f2 that Leica's got coming out for the L-mount alliance, as certain people would say. 35mm f2 and a 50mm f2 that are both reasonably priced. Now, you're going to catch a theme here. Reasonably priced great glass is a sure way to get me to mention you on whatever podcast I'm on.
Yeah. Well, and usually when the entry price for your Summicron or something like that is north of $3,000 or something like that, you know, these are coming in, you know, what is the 50 coming in under 2000? Again, for if you don't want to pay Leica prices, there's Sigma. They're in the Elmont Alliance too. But Leica sticks around because they make good glass. That's all I'm saying.
Exactly.
Yes.
I'm not saying it's cheap. I'm saying it's better than it could have been.
Affordable Leica glass is always an eye catcher. One of the other things, we were talking about Sigma. They also came out with a 60 to 600 millimeter sports lens. The Bigma is back for mirrorless. I love these goofy lens. I always want to buy them because I think like I need this for my kid's t-ball game. I don't need 600 millimeter reach for a t-ball game, but I don't need to see nose hairs like when they're standing up there with the bat.
Yeah.
But I love, it's like, it's not the fastest lens, 4.5 to 5.6, but for, you know, 600 millimeters at 5.6 is pretty good. And it's not like insanely expensive. It's not cheap. But in terms of when you're getting into wildlife lenses, I know, Canon does a lot of like fixed focal length, like F8 and F11, really long stuff, but 60 to 600 is like very versatile, right? It's not like this comical giant lens. I mean, it's the Bigma, so it is also giant, but I just love Sigma. Just like, we're just doing this. We're going to have this 10x zoom. Here you go. You don't need a point and shoot to get 10x zoom. We can have it on your mirrorless camera too.
The part of this that gets me is if you're looking at it, if you're just reading specs, just straight reading specs, it's 60 to 600 starting at F4.5. Who's going to use that for sports? Nobody wants to use that for sports. But you're at 600 millimeters at 5.6. That's pretty good. Mm-hmm. And maybe you don't need it for T-ball, but I would certainly use this for soccer.
Yeah.
To be able to reach the other corner of the pitch, 600 millimeters is, I mean, it's right up my alley. Okay.
There you go. Get a teleconverter on there too.
Well, I don't know that you'd need that because I don't need to see the nose hairs either. But
900 mil. That's like lions. Like, at that point, it's like only lions and things that can murder you is the only reason to have that long. Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
All right. We'll finish this off here.
Well, I am excited about the OM Digital's new 90 millimeter f3.5 macro. I'm not excited about the glass per se. I'm not excited about it being macro. 90 millimeters is kind of a strange focal length, but I get it. F3.5, perfectly usable. I'm excited because this is another sign that OM Digital is actually taking this seriously and they're going to continue to put stuff out. I just like the progress.
For existence.
Yeah, I just like the idea of Olympus sticking around to just have another OM Systems to stick around and stay in the market for a little bit longer. I'm happy about that.
OM Systems remind me of Apple after Steve Jobs passed away, and that you're wondering at what point does the last of the thing that Olympus had in the pipeline or Steve Jobs had in the pipeline end, and they have to start operating kind of on their own. I don't know if this – I'm assuming they've only been owned by OM System for – or they've only been OM System for a year, so I'm assuming this was in the Olympus pipeline. But yes, new things, keep that. Keep Micro Four Thirds alive. I love that as a system. I still think it has a really cool purpose. So yay, glass for a system. It makes me happy. All right, well, we're going to close this out here with a really cool story from the world of racing. This racing season, Formula One drivers will use helmet point of view cameras on all 23 tracks on its schedule. This comes after 2 years of testing, so they've put in the work. Although previously these were only used for practice sessions, this will be the first time we're going to be seeing the footage from an actual race. The camera shouldn't impact a driver's helmet. They weigh a paltry 1.4 grams and are only 8 millimeters in diameter. So, I mean, like, super, super tiny. It's set kind of on the eye line of the driver too, so you're getting that perspective. It does have some limits though when you're dealing with a camera that's small. Obviously, stabilization is not great in any of them, and resolution is limited at 1080p. Still though, should provide some amazing perspective for how fast the action is on the track. And I watched a couple of these. I'm not a race guy. I'm not, if I was going to, Formula One would be what I would get into. But just seeing that, like, it's so visceral, and you're seeing the shifts getting done in real time. You're seeing like just how tight everything is in a way that I don't know, an overhead shot or corner shots and stuff even don't get. It was really fascinating to see.
Yeah. And I really like this. The reason I wanted to put this in here is because of the safety reasons for it. Formula One and all the major racing series around the world have been going through this safety issue. And one of the things that a lot of the drivers keep bringing up is points of view and, you know, inability to see around certain safety features and, you know, the halo and all that other stuff. This is going to provide a lot of data that's going to give perspective on what the drivers can see, when they can see it, how quickly they can see it when something happens. And it's going to follow the helmet around. So you're going to be able to see them looking around and notice, well, when they go around these corners at this speed, you know, this is happening, things like that. I'm really excited about the safety aspect. Plus, as a guy that likes to watch, you know, heavy, hard racing, this is pretty cool to see this perspective.
So it's something that looks cool and will make people safer. That seems like it's a win-win.
Yeah, so there's got to be a downside somewhere, right? If you can find a downside, we'd love to hear from you. Feedback at Daily Tech News Show. Go ahead and put photo news in the subject line, and we will try to find it and bring it into the show. And we would really love to know what you think about all the new stuff that came out of CES and outside of CES over the last few months. So drop us a line, feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com with the subject line, photo news.
And remember to catch Daily Tech News Show. It's live Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 2000 UTC. You can find out more and watch it at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. Remember to tune in Monday. Andrew Heaton is going to be on the show. He's always fantastic when he's on the show, so make sure you tune in for that. But we will be back next month. Until then, remember, have a super sparkly day.
Just maybe not directly into your lens.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And
it's a survival mechanism to just be like, worry the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.